Welcome to Vassals of Kingsgrave. My name is Glenn Douglas Rivers from the forums and Discord, and I am joined by...
Hi, David HHH on the Discord and whatever else. Are the forums even active anymore?
It's been a long time since I've logged in. Maybe 6 months at least since I was able to log in.
Yeah, I tried a few months ago and was able to get in, but nothing had been posted in forever, so... we're modern now, we're on Discord.
I know. Today we will discuss All of Us Strangers, the 2023 movie starring Andrew Scott, Paul Mescal, Claire Foy, and Jamie Bell. There will be many spoilers during this podcast on the plot and the twist of the film. What were your thoughts on the film?
Well, I liked it a lot. I mean, for one thing, it seems a weird movie for us to be doing on this because, you know, we do tend to do nerd culture, but I think it being a ghost story kind of gives it that twist that works with Vassals of Kingsgrave. I mean, it's a weird genre mix. You've got like a gay love story and a treatise on despair and loneliness and depression and trauma mixed with a ghost story. Like, it's kind of an interesting combination, but I think it was the character stuff and like the real discussion of like how families have treated, you know, gay men and queer people in general, but, you know, particularly like how his family failed him. I mean, I know that the writer and director had said he made this movie like specifically like for my generation of gay men to be like, you know, to look at how, you know, families have failed us and the trauma we have from it. Because, I mean, he has his trauma, of course, of having lost his parents as kids, but he didn't have a great childhood either. So, I liked it a lot, though, all around. But we'll talk more in detail about that stuff.
What would you rate it out of 5?
I'd give it at least a 4.5 and possibly a 5. I liked it a lot.
I really enjoyed it. It's I might have not watched it had you not messaged me about it. I did know about it, and I had watched it was Paul Mescal. He had gone onto the Graham Norton show for an interview about the film. That's when I first learned about it. And I seen a few adverts about it, and it would have, you know, probably, I probably would have eventually watched it on Disney Plus. It's due to be on Disney Plus in a few days on the 20th.
Oh, really? Okay.
But just because you mentioned it, and then when I watched the trailer again, read a bit into it, made me want to actually catch it at the cinema, so I managed to last month, and it was great to watch it without knowing that twist at the end. And I'm really bad for guessing how a film will end, so I've never seen it coming. So we can sort of talk about that later, but
It was also on Hulu. It's actually in his right now on Hulu. So that was it first. That's probably what brought it to most of the masses, I think.
Oh yeah, of course.
Well, I mean, I first heard about it because there was so much publicity around it, between that and Fellow Travelers coming out around the same time. There were lots of publicity for both of them, and they often, like, you know, you've got some hot guys and all of these hot actors, and, you know, they were kind of the two gay things of the moment.
Yep.
Were those two, and they were all over press. In fact, they even did some like photo calls of all four of the stars of the two of them, you know, the main stars, I should say, you know, getting together and doing publicity for it. And there was like a photo shoot and stuff like that. So that's how I caught it. If you were on social media at all and you had a lot of gay people in your social media circle, you definitely probably heard something about it.
Absolutely. Like yourself, I would rate it as 4.5. Really enjoyed the story. I thought it was a great pace. It wasn't, you know, some films you watch and you think that was too long. I think this was just the right length, and you know, some of the characters, the views, I guess it resonated as well with me. Some of the conversations that I guess Adam had with his parents, and in terms of the, since we mentioned it, the twist ending, so you had a suspicion, or did you
Yeah,
see some clues?
I mean, the problem with a movie like this is you spend the whole time trying to figure out why are these things happening? What is it? Is it real? Is it like trying to figure out like the mechanics of it? So, you know, I'm sort of looking at all that. And so that had me going like, and of course, the great thing about this is it all ultimately doesn't matter because it's about the characters. And like, so I mean, I kind of figured out that, you know, that Harry was dead. And then the question becomes later, and it's probably something, well, is Adam himself dead too? Or, you know, what's going on there? There was a whole lot of like, I was in my head the whole movie going like, what is this about? What, why is this happening? And, you know, is it real? Is it a hallucination? Is it his depression talking? You never know. And I'm
I
still not
was.
100% sure. And I don't think you're supposed to be.
There were a lot of questions I had. Is he actually seeing his parents? Are they ghosts, or is he imagining this? This is the conversation they would have. This is his imagination, or are they actually ghosts? I did think a lot that he keeps going to this house. Do people actually live in this house or not?
Right, that was the one I was definitely like, has no one moved into this house in, you know, 30 years?
Especially when he breaks the window, and is
Right.
I kept thinking that during that scene that the actual owners of the house would
Right.
open the door.
Yeah, and be like, what are you doing? House.
And I didn't think of whether Adam himself was dead. I know that I didn't actually pick up on that Harry was dead. Like I said to you in a private message, I did think, okay, so even though Harry is dead, and we know that by the end of the film, at the beginning of the film when we first meet them, then they're both still alive, so is what
I
my
think
thought
the,
was.
yeah, I think the implication is meant to be that, you know, that Harry was like depressed at that time. I mean, he had a bottle with him, and he was like, he went to try to reach out as kind of like a, you know, last, you know, cry for help to Adam. And when Adam rejected him, he ends up, you know, getting depressed and going and drinking back in his apartment, and that ends up killing him. I don't think he like kills himself, but I think he like overdoses, which is actually different from the original book, which actually I just wanted to mention briefly.
Oh, have you read it?
I have not, but I did a little research last night preparing for this podcast. So for those who don't know, this movie, which is written and directed by Andrew, is it Haig? Is that how you
Andrew
pronounce it?
Haig.
Egg. Okay, so is based on a novel called Strangers from Japan from a Taichi Yamada from 1987. There are some very big differences in them, but a lot of the main plot points are the same. And then they also made this into a movie in Japan called The Discarnates,
Oh, I didn't know this.
which was actually done more as a straight-on horror film. And I haven't watched it, but I haven't read the book or watched it, but I read what happens in the book, and just so I know like what the difference is. And I also read the I also watched I managed to find the movie. I didn't have time to watch the whole thing, but I watched like kind of the climax of it. So for those who might be interested, there are some very big differences. For one thing, the main character that Adam is based on is not gay, he's straight. The person that he, you know, the Harry character basically is a woman,
Oh.
and there's the twist, but there's actually the twist is much more important in the book, because in that one what's happening is he does go to see his parents and all that. Although it's interesting that the place he first runs into his father is in a neighborhood of Tokyo called Asakusa. And I've actually been there, so that was kind of cool to read about that. Because there's the oldest amusement park in Japan is a park called Hanayashiki, which is in the Asakusa neighborhood, and I've been there twice. So it has the oldest roller coaster in the oldest amusement park and the oldest roller coaster in Japan. So
Oh,
nice little
amazing.
twist. But anyway, so when he first runs into the to the he runs into his father out in like he's out shopping and stuff, and the interesting twist in this is that the ghosts are sapping his life energy, and so it's a little darker. He's aging, and in fact, the people around him notice that he's aging, and it's also emaciating him. And like, and not only does the love interest point it out, but also the, but more importantly, the other people in his life do. And so the whole thing is that, oh, it's these ghosts that are doing this, and if he stays with them, is he like killing himself, basically? But the big twist is when we find out, when we finally figure out that the girl, the love interest, is dead, which we find out because she apparently has some stab the character she actually actively kills herself as opposed to through drugs and alcohol. She stabs herself through the heart. And in the book, it's actually the love interest that's sapping his life energy away. So that's a big twist. Like, so she's actually the love is actually causing it, you know, causing him to, you know, possibly die. And when they make it in a movie, that's definitely like, you know, the climax of the film of like, you know, the ghost like floats up and, you know. There's some more to it in that not only is he straight, but he's recently divorced, and that's sort of like part of his like failing in life there is, you know, the whole damage and trauma that he's faced has made him unable to last, and you know, unlike in the movie where it's made him unable to even form any relationships, he forms them but then fails in them, and in fact he ends up abandoning his own kid really, like after the divorce, like they've fallen apart. So it's kind of, you know, that perpetuation of traumas through generations and bad parenting and all that. So he ends up doing that. And there's another weird, but there's a few other characters in it. Like there's a like guy he used to work with who ends up quitting because he wants a relationship with this guy's ex-wife, and he ends up like saving him because in the end he's the one who figures out that the love interest is dead and is sapping his energy, and does help save him at the end. So it's kind of wild in that the basic concept of the movies are the same as the book, the movie, and the original movie, but there's whole huge changes, which is kind of cool.
You're right. There
But I
are. It does sound like there's a lot of differences between those two plots, and
right.
I think I'll need to try and look out for this film, this foreign language film.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, like, I guess what Andrew Hay had liked about it was the whole treatise on, like, you know, depression and loss and family issues. And then I like that he made that into, you know, a talk of how, you know, that same trauma that most, you know, LGBTQ people face these days, and particularly my generation. So
Yes.
that. It's interesting that he took a story and took all the same themes and all of that, but applied it to a completely different situation that in many ways is universal. So that was kind of cool about it. One of the things I liked about the movie.
I guess one thing that is talked about a lot with the movie is it was in the running for a lot of the award shows. So I know that Andrew Scott, he was nominated for a Golden Globe. Paul Mescal previously has been nominated for an Academy Award, but sadly had received no Academy Awards. This film, was that a surprise to you, or did you think maybe it had a chance to be nominated for some?
I mean, I think part of the problem is that the awards things these days in Hollywood are a popularity contest.
That's true.
And I don't think this was really as well. It wasn't seen by as enough people to actually probably get enough votes to make it. That would be my guess.
I had
I
the
mean,
same thought
clearly
that's
the performances by all four of the main cast are Oscar worthy.
I know that it did I can't remember if it won any, but it did get nominated for a lot of BAFTAs.
Yeah.
But in terms of Academy Awards, I did think that low budget British film probably hindered against its chances, even though I know that other British films in the past, even low budget, have received nominations, but this one just I just didn't imagine it being nominated for anything.
Right. Well, I mean, it got a whole lot of British Independent Film Awards, and I think it did it get some BAFTAs? I think it was definitely were nominations. I know for director
Yes.
and screenplay, and I think Claire Foy and Paul Mescal both got nominated for BAFTAs,
That's right. Yep.
and it actually Mescal won the British Independent Film Awards for best supporting performance, so he got that, and so did Jamie Bell. Oh, wait, that doesn't make sense. No, sorry, Bell was nominated and Mescal
And
won.
Mescal
So,
won.
and Claire Foy was also nominated.
Yes.
Actually, so was Andrew Scott was nominated for the British Independent Film Awards. Sorry. And the Critics' Choice Awards, it was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Oh, yes.
So, and of course it's been nominated for the GLAAD Media Awards, but Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against
Oh, I
Defamation, so.
think I had seen which award show was it? It won Best Film at one of those types of award shows that celebrate representation of LGBT QIA stuff, and it beat out actually, Poor Things, it beat out, Oppenheimer, it beat out Barbie. So it's getting some recognition, which is good.
And Andrew Scott was nominated for the Golden Globe for that.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's about what you expect, you know? It's not a big budget, big name movie that everyone's heard of, so that's not going to help it. I thought it was fine. I mean, it deserved it, but.
One thing before we talk about the characters is just the whole setting of the story. The fact that it's just these two men, they live in separate rooms, but in this massive tower block of apartments, and it's just them. It just I just couldn't imagine that happening
Yeah.
in real life.
I would
Seems
say
like a huge health and safety risk.
in the middle of London, not only that, but just to have like a building go to waste, really. Like, I mean, I get the impression like it just opened recently and they moved in, and like they're the first two that happened to move in. But you would think that even at opening, like the building would be half full at least. I think it kind of, accentuates the themes of like isolation,
Yes.
just having them there. But that also could lead to, asking the question of, was all of this like the reason no one's there is because it didn't really happen, or because they're both dead and this is like purgatory, so they're kind of in their own little space? Like, it leads to those questions, I think. And I think you're supposed to th think of those questions.
Absolutely. When I was watching the film, I didn't realize that it was a massive age gap between Adam and Harry until afterwards. I knew there was an age gap, but I was thinking it was more like maybe 5 years, but it seems more like
Oh, no.
a
Oh, it
15-year age gap.
definitely. I mean, in real life, for sure, and I think it was meant to be in the film that way. And that's also strangely from the original book as well.
Oh
So,
yeah.
in the novel, the girl he falls for is much younger as well. Which somehow, when it's a woman, is a little creepier,
But
but.
within the story, we meet Adam. He's in his 40s. He is a script writer, and I guess he meets, well, I guess he meets Harry because there's a fire alarm, and he leaves the building. But then Harry's not bothered. He just stays in there, and
Right.
then they eventually, get chatting. And then initially Harry, makes an advanced move on Adam, but Adam turns him away, and then the next time we see the two together, then he's more willing to, give it a chance.
And you
But
can
that's
kind of
after
take
he
that
meets
as
his
the first
parents.
sign. I was going to say that's kind of the first sign you can see that like something's going wrong with Adam, because it's like, I'm sorry, if Paul Mescal was coming on to you and inviting you in, and wanting to hook up with you, would you be pushing him away?
No, definitely not.
I mean, they're both very handsome men, but I mean, definitely there's signs there that something's going on, because he's I think Harry's meant to be the young hottie, and Adam is the depressed old gay guy. So he's hot. I mean, after all, this is the Andrew Scott was the hot priest from
He
Fleabag, so
was.
that everyone was talking about
Although
for
I've
a
still
while.
not watched that show,
Me
but
neither,
I hear about it all the time.
but everyone knows there was a hot priest.
Yes. Although I did love Pride, if you've watched that.
Yes, I did like that, and he was in that. And of course, as a nerd, I loved Sherlock, which of course
Yes.
Scott was Moriarty. So I had not seen Mescal in anything before this, but he was very good. But I mean, definitely, I think the standout performance of the movie is definitely Andrew Scott playing Adam is just perfect in it.
And then, I guess afterwards, he's maybe traveling home from work one day, and runs into his father, and then goes back to where he used to live, and then has this conversation with his parents. Then he leaves. Then he sees, of course, Harry once again. And of course, the relationship develops from there. And occasionally, he does go back and see his parents a few times. What do you think? So, I think it's maybe three visits with his parents before finally they say that
Yes.
it
That
has
has
to
to stop.
end or it has to
Yeah.
stop. Why do you think it has to stop, or what's the reason for that?
I mean, I got the impression when I was watching it that there was something like, some reason, like, the rules of being a ghost, I guess, or something. That was the impression I felt was coming, but I think it was really more of a just they know he needs to move on and he can't be keep living in the past, and he's got this relationship coming. I mean, we don't know if they know that he's dead, that Harry's dead or not. I don't know how that works with ghosts, since we don't know there are any ghosts, if there are ghosts in the world, but like, I'm not sure. I mean, I get the impression that they were trying to make him move on and move on with his life and accept love or whatever, and that continuing to live in the past with them, in this case almost literally, is probably not healthy for him.
No.
I mean, and I think that's, there's that evolves over time, that they realize it. As first they have to come to realize like how they failed him as parents, and then, and I think honestly that's the stuff that I think really hit the best and hardest on in the movie, was the scenes as the parents, as he and his parents are coming to terms with their childhood and how much they failed him. Of course, the coming out scene to his mother is really, really like incredible storytelling, where she came out. I mean, he she died, they died before, all the modern understanding of, what being gay or LGBTQ is about. I mean, before we ever even said those letters. And the idea that our son could be gay probably would have never occurred to them, because it's not something that like was a thing you think about like it would be today. I think it was a really that was a really like how she just didn't understand. I don't think she was being like hateful, but she just didn't get it. Like, how's this possible? And aren't you going to be a lonely person? And of course, they would have died just around when AIDS was hitting too. So
that's true.
And that's definitely like an undertone through it all. Like, there's a few points where like Adam or Harry are looking weak, and you're wondering like, is that an issue? Or you know, and he said that, and Haig said that was deliberate too.
Mm-hmm. I know. I did sort of think that it's maybe something that Adam thinks about a lot, that his parents died when he was 12, so he never really had to, you know, he never got to tell them that he was gay. How would they react to it? There's probably, well, he sort of hints at it, there's a lot of times where the dad uses that sort of language, you know, pansy and that sort of thing. So he does sort of think, how would they react? And then he sort of thinks about his own relationships. Was it impacted by that? And as you know, initially there's that reaction from his mum, then he has that conversation with his dad.
It's kind of weird how his dad ends up being cooler about it, I think, like, at least more quickly. Which
I think
wouldn't
it's because
expect,
the,
and it's a nice twist.
I think it's because the dad had did suspect initially, so like he was having that conversation of he heard him crying in his room, knew he was being bullied, probably suspected because he was gay. So whereas the mum probably never thought of it as a possibility, but the dad did, which maybe is why it's a different reaction and conversation.
I mean, I think that's actually probably my favorite scene in the whole movie, is the conversation between the father and the son when he has to, you know, when he says, you know, yeah, you had a tough childhood, you know, you were probably bullied a lot, weren't you? And he said, yeah. And he goes, yeah, I suspected it. I heard you crying in your room. And then he asks his father point blank, then why didn't you come in and like help me? I mean, that's got to be such a tough moment. And it's interesting to frame it as more almost from the father's point of view than the son, of the father having to, like, come to terms with the fact of how badly he failed his son there, you know, and how badly they're still failing him, like, with his, you know, with his wife having, you know, not really reacted well to it all. So the two of them, you know, that, like, the mother and father had to have had a conversation off screen, back when they were back in Ghostland or whatever, of like, what the fuck did we do to our poor kid? You know, we've really failed him and we're still failing him and we got to fix this. So, I mean, I feel like that must have happened, right? And what
That's
a weird
true.
Conversation that would be, you know?
And because they have that, that development of eventually accepting their son, I think that's why Adam's seen his parents in the first place. And then because of that, I guess, acceptance, that's why they have to stop these visits. But like you were saying, I don't know if, because there is that moment in the film where they are in the house and they're looking out the window and they see Adam and Harry. Do they know he's not alive or not? Do they even see him in the first place? Do they see Harry?
I wasn't clear if Harry was seeing them or if, you know, he just saw him like talking to himself in the house, like, you know, what's if he was wondering, like, because he leaves and he freaks out, which is kind of weird and we never get any explanation for, you know, when Harry just disappears after that.
Yes.
Which I guess if he's dead makes sense that he faded out somehow or whatever, but
and Harry gets that title moment of the film, that he's talking about his family, that he's got a sister, he's got a brother, they're more well liked within his family because they have children, and that resonated with me because my sister, she has children, and I often think, oh, I'm just looked at as, oh well, there's Glenn, I mean, we like him, but he never gave us kids. He never gave us grandkids, you know. And, like, Harry was saying that, he says that sometimes we feel like strangers in our own home because he's got his sister and her family in there, like, front and centre in his parents' house, the big picture of them, and, you know, Where's the pictures of Harry?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that that he's really trying to bring out there is this notion that, I mean, there's always this notion we put out that it gets better, and it certainly absolutely has gotten better for this generation. You know, I mean, I mean, at least, you know, he wasn't kicked out of the house or anything like that. Like, you know, I mean, it definitely, for all the talk of how things have gotten better, and they absolutely have, we're still not there yet. It's not great, you know, for a lot of people. And I think families have failed a whole lot of LGBTQ people, and hopefully they're still getting better and better, but we're not there yet. I mean, we're not there where, like, you know, it's all rainbows and fairy tales, you know?
I did this project for work a few years ago. It was just like sort of not related to work, but just something I wanted to do. And it was this sort of education on LGBT history. And I did a lot of research into this, like recent surveys. And there was something done by, I think it was Stonewall UK. And it was surveying like the UK or like a proportion of the UK and their opinion on gay people, lesbians, bisexuals, and it was something like back in the 1980s, how I guess the question was, what is your opinion of people that are LGBT? And it was something like 17% favourable back in the 1980s, and then modern times, so say like 2017, it was 69%. But that's still over 30% that are not favourable. And then worse than that is that it actually went down a few percentages after that. It was like by 2019, it was 66%. So yeah, there's still a lot of room for improvement in that. And I think during the scene where Adam says, actually, I don't have a girlfriend because I don't like women, I like men. And she has that reaction. She says things like, you must be lonely. And he's like, I am lonely, but it's not because I'm gay. And then she says something like, what do your neighbours think? What do your friends think? And he says, oh no, it's completely different now. And then there's sort of a pause, so almost, and I thought myself, is it? Sort of like it's asking the question to the audience, is it really that much different? I mean, it is better, but it's not completely acceptable, like Adam says.
I mean, on some level, things are a whole shitload better. I mean, having lived
Absolutely.
through that era, I mean, there's no question. You know, I mean, I mean, it's interesting. We're talking about this right after St. Patrick's Day. And I live in South Boston now, where in Boston it was a big, huge deal when the gay Irish group wanted to march in the St. Patrick's Day parades in New York and in Boston. And, you know, we get that history this weekend. And, you know, it's how things were different. I mean, literally, when they marched under court order, Supreme Court order, and, you know, had things thrown at them. Like, I mean, they were not only screamed at by everyone on the street, because I came the second year. The first year I didn't, because the police asked everyone to stay away for safety. But the second year I came out to support the group, and they were actually friends of mine who marched in Boston. And I gotta say, it was one of the scariest things I've ever seen. Like, the crowd screaming and yelling and throwing things at them. And I kind of got closure a couple of years ago because, you know, the parades continued. And eventually they did allow, well, what ended up happening was there were some younger people on the parade committee who allowed the Pride Committee of Boston to march and the LGBTQ Veterans Association to march in the parade, because in Boston it's also a veterans thing, because it's evacuation day of when the British evacuated Boston. So it's kind of a dual parade, and they both marched, and they brought it to the committee and applied, and the young people were all for it, and the old people were against it, and it became a big brouhaha again. But they eventually did. Basically, the young people basically just took over the organization and said, "Screw you to the old people if you're going to be awful about it." And it was interesting. So they did march, and I actually went out and marched with the Pride Committee just to, like, kind of get a little personal closure on it, because I was actually very involved behind the scenes when it happened. So, like, seeing... And it was really interesting marching, because there were certainly a few people. You could see the looks on particularly some old people's face of, like, you know, oh, my. But so many people were so welcoming. And I think probably the gay groups got more applause and cheers than almost any other group. And I feel like the neighborhood was kind of having a reckoning with its past and was saying, like, you know, people would literally walk up and say, we just want you to know that you're welcome here. And, you know, welcome to our neighborhood. And like, it was, like, interesting, because it was like the community was kind of dealing with what they'd done, you know, I mean, before some of the people were even born. But it felt like the generation that lives here now, because, I mean, actually, a lot of gay people now live here. And, I mean, I'm sure they did then, but, you know, very closeted. And it was just interesting to see, like, how far we have come. And while things certainly aren't perfect anywhere in the world, and there's lots of awful, awful things still happening, and there's lots of personal trauma we all have to live through, I mean, it still is a lot of change that we've had in a very short period of time. And it's important to recognize that while also understanding that things are still really tough for a lot of people out there. You know, it's still crazy to think that in the world that we live in today, there are lots and lots of people who are still terrified to come out of the closet, you know.
Oh, so absolutely.
And people will be, you know, kicked out of their homes and, you know, awful things like that. And it still happens. But at the same time, we can celebrate the progress we've made. So
the Stonewall had surveyed people that were homeless at the time, and there was a large percentage of those people that were homeless just because they were gay, you know, young teens that were kicked out of the house. So, yeah, certainly terrible. But at the same time, there are, absolutely, there's a lot of progress, you know, a lot of young boys, girls are coming out of the closet much younger than people in their 30s, 40s or 50s did. So, yeah, absolutely, there's a lot of progress.
Yep. Well, I think what's interesting is how, you know, every era has their issue that kind of gives blowback from the community. You know, certainly in the 80s, AIDS was a big thing, because AIDS kind of forced the world and our countries to basically accept that we exist, because up until then, I think it was really like, you know, one of those, like, we were almost like, you know, the leprechaun, we were a myth, you know, like, do we really exist to a lot of people? And we did, and people just didn't think about it. And then, like, AIDS forced us out of the closet, because, you know, it was happening and you couldn't deny it. So it really kind of changed the thought process. And I think now we're kind of going through that with the trans community.
Yes.
You know, and it's becoming and unfortunately, whenever you have progress, when it comes to civil rights issues, there's always going to be blowback and, you know, people who fight against it. I know in both America and in the UK, you know, the trans issue, quote unquote, not that people's existence is an issue, has become like a huge, huge thing. And in both eras, the right wing definitely used it to try to promote their own, you know, political agenda, you know, use it to, like, get votes and to get people mad. And, you know, the alt-right likes to rile people up, and they certainly now are using the trans people as the scapegoats in the same way that people with AIDS were the scapegoats.
I've certainly seen that happen in UK elections, and, well, not elections, but just general UK House of Parliament type discussions. So I have seen it happen, and likewise that the trans community is almost like a parallel with gay people in the 1980s, because there's a lot of hate crimes that happen for the trans community. Well, actually, likewise for people that what is it they call it, PSA, PDA, personal displays of affection. A lot of gay people are also in, you know, reporting a lot of hate crimes, but more so trans people, because there's a rise in that.
Well, and when you, and it's not surprising because whenever you have visibility, people have to confront issues they try to ignore.
That's true.
And they're, and, you know, historically, there's always a blowback. You know, in the civil rights movement in America back in the 60s, there was certainly a rise of lynchings and the awful things that happened to black people.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it in pretty much any time any group comes out and, like, speaks up for themselves, there's always going to be a blowback of people trying to stop it. And there is also going to be political activist type people and politicians who will, you know, take advantage of it. You know, hey, if I can make a big deal, get on the news talking about trans people, then, you know, hey, I get free publicity. And it really sucks. But
yes,
that's sort of how, and it's really sad how, you know, we're seeing all these parallels over and over again. And in different countries around the world, we're just seeing it, you know, especially with trans people now. And it's horrible, you know. And unfortunately, it certainly doesn't help make people safer when you have people on TV talking about how all trans people, or even all, you know, gay and trans people and LGBTQ people all in general, calling us groomers and all that stuff. You know, it's not surprising you're going to see unfortunately, people believing that rhetoric and, you know, taking it out on people violently. It's dangerous, the things that people are saying and doing right now. And unfortunately, we're the bodies that have to pay the price sometimes.
You know, when I was thinking, right, what do we want to talk about, or how are we going to frame this discussion, I also thought of The Sixth Sense, and the twist ending being very similar to that.
Yep. He's seeing dead people.
Yes.
But then, so, I mean, it's just an interesting thing of, like, so, I mean, I think they're getting at that Harry died that night when they first met.
Yes.
And something they don't really deal with as much in the movie, but apparently is in the original story, is that, you know, ultimately, if that's the case, then Adam is almost directly responsible for Harry dying.
I mean, because he might not have died had he let him into his room, yeah.
I mean, he definitely wouldn't have, because he would have been with him and not drinking, probably, mm-hmm. You know, like, or as much.
Well, then again, would he have overdosed? Possibly, but then he could let him into the room, maybe they sleep together, but then afterwards, Harry still drinks himself to death afterwards. Right.
Although it's likely he probably wouldn't have, mm-hmm. because the thing he was most depressed about, you know. I mean, it feels like what they were going for is that was Harry coming to Adam was a cry for help, mm-hmm. you know? And unfortunately, Adam wasn't able to accept that cry and help him. And strangely enough, does after he dies.
If, I guess, assuming that Adam is alive, then I guess the first question would be, so I guess when he sees his parents, it's maybe like a few encounters before they are then gone. They have that moment in the diner where they go out for a meal and then that's them.
Right.
You won't see them again. How long do you think that will happen for Harry before he moves on from seeing Harry?
I don't know. I mean, I think they kind of left. I mean, I think the idea there was that they're going to stay together for a while. I mean, I think in the stars,
mm-hmm.
at the ending there. But I mean, it's not clear. I mean, that's the thing where I'm not clear. I'm still not sure if I think that Adam is alive or not.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I did see a theory that fade out at the end is mm-hmm. Harry disappearing. So. Mm-hmm. They have that moment where they cuddle in bed, but then Harry goes at that point. But I think maybe it would last a bit longer. Like, you know, if they're both dead, then, yep, that makes sense. That they just stay like that forever.
Right.
But if Adam is alive, then I would imagine that maybe it's a similar thing to his parents, that it does take a while before eventually Harry is the one that says, no, you need to move on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, do you think of the ending as uplifting or as depressing? Like, because I mean, I posted on my Facebook wall when I saw the movie how great it was, and I said, you know, I felt as much as it's a treatise on depression, I think it was uplifting in the end because Harry does figure out how to love again. And a few people posted it on my wall, like, oh no, I felt it was completely depressing because he only figures it out too late. You know, and I'm still not even sure if when they said too late, they meant because Harry's dead or because Adam's dead. Because either way, it would be too late.
I think
But
that it is good that Adam can learn from this and then eventually accept love from someone else, but the problem is how long that will take for him to move on from Harry.
does actually him falling for Harry prevent him from
From
finding
meeting
love
someone
again?
else, yeah.
You know, yeah. Because that can definitely happen. I mean, they weren't together for very long, so you'd hope not, but, you know, this is a big change in his life. I mean, he'd never really had a boyfriend or anything. He even says that, you know. And I think that's probably a thing. I mean, I think that's ultimately the message of the film is that, you know, you have to get yourself out of this and move on from your trauma and a lot open yourself up to love. And I think that's where he was going with this movie, was trying to send that message to my generation that, like, we're worthy of love and that we can find it if we if and we shouldn't shut ourselves off to it.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of particularly gay men, and probably a lot of trans women too, and trans men, and I'm sure lesbians and bisexuals too, but shut themselves off to the idea even, you know. And I think AIDS gets mixed up in all of that because you've, you know, got the whole issues of sex. But I think that definitely it's a very damaged generation I come from, and I think that was what this story was like. That was the message he was trying to send out, and he even said he wrote this like specifically for our generation. So I think that's where he was going with it. So I think it's meant to be uplifting, and that's what I took from it. So I guess that's good, where others might just find it sad and depressing. What was your take on the end there? Was it like, did it make you feel better? Did it make you feel worse? Did it depress you, uplift you? What do you think?
I guess if, as I was watching it, my thought was that Adam was alive. I didn't even think that he was dead until you mentioned it just now. So I guess assuming that Adam's alive, then it was a bit sad because, you know, he's finally met this great guy, learned to love someone, but then he's dead. So it won't last very long before he disappears. But it was good in the sense that he can hopefully, you know, the next guy that comes along that
Who's not
he is
dead?
willing to, you know, give it a chance. So that is good. But if like you were saying, they were both dead and it makes sense with the fact that they're in this abandoned, you know, apartment block, that possibly that could be like a version of the afterlife for them, that,
Purgatory or
you
something.
know, if you look at it that way, that they're both dead, then it's actually very nice that, you know, they've both found each other and they've, you know, they can live together forever.
Yeah, I mean it's really hard to take to I mean you can take all of these things from it, and I think they all apply, so I think that's one of the good things. You know, sometimes it's nice to have a film not like be specific. You know, it lets you have your own emotional reaction to it. So I think it is interesting that, like, I instantly was like, who's alive, who's dead? And you just sort of accepted it. And I don't know if that's just how we view movies. I don't know. I mean, because I will say with Sixth Sense, I figured out the twist in Sixth Sense like quarter of the way through the movie.
Oh, wow.
I saw that. Now, maybe part of that was because I saw it years later and I knew there was a twist. Without I managed to not be spoiled, but I knew there was a twist, so I might have been looking for it. I'm not sure, but
This is a long running joke with my boyfriend, but he says this all the time that he watched The Sixth Sense about 3 times before he realized that Bruce Willis was
really? Oh my
dead.
God. Really?
And I say,
That's
how do you,
bizarre.
how did you not know that the first time you watched it?
Yeah. Hey. But I mean, I think we all come into things from a different point of
Yes.
view, a different, and I think having, I'm such a genre fan, of sci-fi, fantasy and whatever, that I'm used to these twists, so maybe I'm more likely to spot them than some people. That'd be an interesting thing to do, like to take a poll of people who've seen this movie, like, did you figure it out? And when did you? And then maybe also even like, what do you think Adam's situation is? And I wonder, like you said, you hadn't even like considered the thought.
No.
I wonder, it'd be interesting to see, like, I wonder what percentage of people who see this movie think, caught the twist. There may be even some people who didn't realize it. I guess I kind of almost like the idea of him being dead better, because they get this happy ending to go off and like fade off into the sunset together. But on the other hand, then the growth almost doesn't matter. If he learned how to love, I mean, I guess he will have a happy ending, so I guess that's good. I don't know. But I definitely was very affected by having watched this movie, and maybe because I've, related to Adam a lot.
Yes.
If you maybe related to Harry a little more, I don't know, but like, I definitely came away from this like really thinking about it a lot, and I definitely had the feeling after this of like, I want to shout it from the rooftops, this is a great movie, go see it, and particularly to my generation,
Yes.
I think it could be, maybe, I don't know if healing is the right word, although it could be, to see this movie could probably help a
Well,
lot of people.
we were discussing just like by private message that this movie, even though there's not a date given against it, that I'm thinking maybe like 2017, so definitely before the COVID pandemic, but like sort of in the mid 2010s, this would be happening. So yes, Harry, I think, would be around the same age as I was at that time. So yeah, I do sort of see myself in Harry too.
And I think Adam's just a few years younger than me, but only a few, because I was definitely out in that time, and out and fighting AIDS, in the
Yes.
middle of when this when the, when the pet when his parents died. So I'm probably 5 to 8 years older than he is. I'm not sure about the actor himself, but definitely what the character is supposed to be. And I'm trying to think, how old is Andrew? Hang on, now I'm curious. Let me Google that really fast. Oh, and actually, no, he's 51, so he's only a couple of years younger
Oh
than me.
yeah,
He's 4 years younger than me, so okay.
Oh, and I don't really know anything about him. Is he gay?
Or, hey, yes,
Ah,
definitely.
right.
Yeah, his entire career is pretty much gay stuff. So.
Oh yeah.
Because he did, not only he did that, he did the movie Weekend, which I keep meaning to see and I haven't gotten around to. And he also was the writer and producer, one of the writers and producers of the show Looking that was on HBO.
Oh, I did watch that.
That was a great show. Yeah, I missed that show. That show was good. So he definitely, is speaking to the gay community and particularly my generation a lot. So.
Oh, good.
Although I think Weekend's more of a younger thing, but did you see Weekend? I
Oh,
haven't.
I've never watched it. I have watched Looking, and just looking at this list that of all his works. Yeah, I've watched Looking the movie, Looking, and
The show.
oh, that's it.
That's all I've seen of it. I Weekend's on my I have to watch it one of these days list, but unfortunately, even sitting at home with COVID for a couple of years and catching up on stuff, that list didn't get all that much shorter. One of these days, I really do, especially after having watched this now, I do want to see it, but it'll be on my list. Well, I mean, I think the father is I think both parents are as interesting of characters as Adam and Harry are.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I think it's an interesting take to really get into, you know, the parents having to deal with the, you know, the consequences of how they raised their kid and, you know, how they failed them. And I mean, I think, you know, in that moment when he says, "I was crying," and you know, he says, "Why didn't you come get me?" I mean, that's, if anything, the come to Jesus moment for him of like, "Oh shit, what did I do to my kid?" You know, and he gets it pretty quick. And I mean, I think it's interesting that he's cool about it so quickly, because I don't know how realistic it would be.
Exactly.
But I think framing it in his own trauma of like, "Oh shit, what did I do?" Like, you know. I think that's an interesting take on the whole story and the situation, because we pretty much only ever generally, you know, in media hear the kids' version of that story, right?
Yes.
You know, and it's, I think it's a nice and interesting take, and I shouldn't have, I feel like, I don't know why it really resonated with me the way the dad reacts to all of that. Maybe it's because I wish my parents would have realized what they did to me, you know, and I don't know, but it was just, it really, I thought, was like very, I think it's like the most powerful scene in the whole movie when they have that conversation and then the hugs after and all that. Like, it was, and it's interesting that the father needs the hug as much as he needs to give his son the hug in that scene. So that was good. I liked it a lot.
Me too.
I think that dynamic really makes the movie even more so than the, you know, the relationship between, you know, the two men.
Mm-hmm.
I think the relationship with the father and the mother, like, is for me what makes the movie so interesting, I think. Sorry, what were you saying?
Oh, absolutely, I agree. But I guess, how many people growing up have had that thought of, oh, if only my parents did, like, mm-hmm. sort of allude to, oh, we'd be happy if you were gay or something like that. You would hope that they would say that, which they didn't, and then it just sort of makes it, like, personally takes you like longer to then accept yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also that not only applies to queer kids, but I think it applies to everything. Like, I think we all have things we wish our parents would have said to us when we were a kid. And we all have ways in which parents failed us or weren't there for us or were. And so, I mean, I think that's a lot of what makes this universal, I think, too. So, which is cool.
But it's been great to talk to you about this today, David. And we'll try and organize a fellow travelers podcast in future.
That was a great show.
I have still to watch the final two episodes. I have watched it and I really enjoy it, but I always seem to find other rubbish to watch instead of, you know, continue with watching it. But yeah, I've still got two episodes to watch, so I'll try and watch those tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't generally binge things that often. I tend to watch things, you know, an episode at a time over a week or so. You know, and I actually binged that. I started watching it. I watched the first one and then jumped into the second one. And the next thing you know, I'd watch the whole thing. And I almost never do that these days.
It is a great show. And it would be great to discuss that in a future podcast. But, have a good day, David. And thank you for everyone out there that listened.